Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Just seems sad with people in the room.
Oh, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Football Ramble. It's lovely to have your ears, and it's also lovely for me to be sitting amongst three magnificent men by the names of Luke Moore.
All right.
Pete Donaldson.
Hello.
James Jim Campbell.
Evening.
And me. I sort of said that as if there was another one on the
I was wondering whether I was going to be included in that
scene. I'm giggling because Marcus has got a mark on his face that's really funny to look at, and he got it on a bouncy castle.
but won't give any more detail as to what happened.
Bouncy castles, by their very nature,
are soft.
No.
Did you have a bottle of scotch on there with you?
I cut myself on my razor sharp wit.
On the bouncy castle?
Yeah. No,
it's on your cheek, though. It must have dribbled out of your face. Up your face.
Stop being nasty.
Yeah. I'm not being nasty.
Graphic. I was at a Vickers and Tarts party.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
So I went as Reverend Run.
Oh, did you? That's a great shout. Did you get headbutted by someone else on the back?
No, I think it was one of the. I don't know how it happened. There was a melee of bodies.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like an orgy to me.
I came up with it. Well, Vickers and Tarts. We were forgiven at the end. Can we get on with the show?
Yes.
You're the one talking about your sordid life.
Yeah.
It would have been proud on all of our minds if you didn't mention it.
Seldom do I get to mention it, James. It is the Football Ramble, ladies and gentlemen. In light of David Moyes and Jim Jeffries and a couple of other managers going a little bit crazy at the referees in the last weekend of footballing action, what was a memorable rant by a player or a manager at the referee? And I'm going to be unconventional and say James or Jim.
Well, I was,
you start.
We did this last week, didn't we? We spoke about Jack Charlton, obviously, in the profile, and obviously that's a really famous rant when he couldn't get the John Aldridge on the pitch, and also he couldn't get the water to his players.
Really
angry. But because we did that last week, I'm going to go for maybe one of the mother of all of them. Pete, you can sort that out later. I'm going to go for when Graham Taylor, you tell him he's cost me my job.
Yeah.
Just amazing.
Tell him yourself, lazy.
Yeah. Well, he was in the dugout.
Technical area.
Thank you. That was England away to
Holland,
the Netherlands.
I believe it
was, in World Cup 94 qualifier.
When we didn't qualify.
When Ronald Koeman murked us.
That was horrible, that was.
It was an awful evening.
To be fair, I think we need to caveat it by saying Taylor, he did have a point.
Yeah, it was completely outrageous. Holland were a better side than England, but that decision.
Koeman just sort of like
manhandled
David Platt to the ground like he wasn't even there.
And then scored.
It annoys me now.
Yeah, same. Yeah, it annoys me.
Yeah, strong start there, James. Strong start. Pete.
I'm going to go for Peter Reid because he's known to have a rant. Remember this Premier Passions little documentary? Yeah.
This is not going to be another anti Sunderland rant.
No, it's not. No, okay. He was actually a manager of Leeds at the time, so up yours the laws.
Call me that again.
He was on the sidelines. I think it was against Middlesbrough. He was trying to get Lucas Radebe on.
So it was an anti Middlesbrough rant,
was
it?
He was trying to get him on in the third. I don't think he even had four officials anymore back then, did they?
Probably of like something like that.
There'd have been somebody different. There.
Somebody was there anyway, and they didn't allow him.
A particularly benevolent passerby. Please.
Yes, didn't allow Lucas Radebe onto the pitch, and he was very upset about the whole thing. If he scores now, you are in trouble. Trouble.
Well, no, you are, because you'd have lost the game.
I love, you know, the famous song about Peter Reid. Peter Reid's got a
monkey's head.
Yeah. My favourite thing about that song is actually the second verse, which is Peter Reid eats bananas with his feet. I think that's much better.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's brilliant.
Yeah. Mm. Well, perhaps some video evidence wouldn't be amiss. Luke, what have you got?
I should go for the year that Portsmouth won the FA Cup, 2008, and we beat Manchester United at Old Trafford. And this is brilliant because Portsmouth were absolutely battered at Old Trafford. For more or less the entire game.
You could have sold them in a fish and chip shop.
Oh, yeah, ridiculous. Yeah, yeah.
It's like that episode of The Simpsons where Homer becomes a boxer because he could just take so much punishment.
It was, yeah. It was. And do you remember the bit when, for some reason, Michael Carrick should have put the ball over the line and Sylvain Distan did that challenge where he rolled over the ball, stopped on the. Anyway, it's ridiculous.
It defied science. That.
But then Pompey got a penalty, and it was a penalty. Mm. And they had the keeper sent off, and Rio Ferdinand had to go and goal, and Montari scored it, and Pompey went through. And to say Ferguson went mental afterwards is an understatement, and it wasn't at all underpinned by the fact that they should have won. He was being ridiculous, and he went off on one. I think the referee was Martin Atkinson, and he went mental at him, saying that it was a disgrace. You know, he's not fit to referee. Usual stuff. Yeah. Then he went off on one at Keith Hackett, chairman of the referees, for not doing his job properly.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's really fair.
Do you think he was just a bit annoyed that they'd lost such a one-sided game at home?
Yeah, it was absolutely.
To the point of like those Portsmouth players should have faced jail sentence for such a mugging.
It was, you know? They should have had striped pajamas on. But it didn't even stop there, because then Carlos Queiroz got involved.
Oh, so he did.
And said, obviously something to him was very witty, and I understand he's speaking his second language, but he went, the referee should have got a red card.
Yeah,
see what he's done. And he also called the ref a robber as well.
Did he?
Yeah, great stuff. Nice. That's definitely my favourite one of recent years, without a shadow.
Yeah, that is a good one. I'm going to go for another FA Cup clash, and it was Aston Villa away to Crystal Palace when Neil Warnock was in charge. And
was it not Sheffield United?
No, it was Crystal Palace.
Oh, okay, right, okay.
And it was at Selhurst Park, and Palace were brilliant, and Ambrose scored a free kick for Palace to put them 2-1 up, I think.
Oh, yeah, I remember this one.
And then Villa equalised in the 87th minute through a header from a corner. I forget who scored it. But the long and short of it was it shouldn't have been a corner, and the linesman gave it as a corner. And Warnock went mental. He said, "We've had a Premier League referee in charge of this game, and Mr. Massey, who was the referee's assistant, the linesman, and absolutely crazy." And he was saying, "Will Mr. Massey remember us when he's sitting watching this goal on his settee tonight?" And all this sort of stuff.
Oh, he's got a settee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, the decadence.
But ask yourself this: does he deserve a settee? Colin Wanker, Neil Warnock.
Yeah, dude, what was Colin Wanker?
That's an anagram of his name.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Colin Wanker, they got me. Yeah, super. It's a tough one. I'm going to give the points to James or Jim.
Yeah.
Very well documented. Rant that was.
Well, literally, it's in a documentary.
Yeah. Exactly, Marvellous. Right, well, let's get on to the Premier League. And David Moyes had a rant, obviously, in Everton's marvellous comeback against Manchester United.
And justifiably so as well, I think, Moyes, because there was an attack happening, and the ref hadn't added on extra time for the goals being scored, because it's 30 seconds each time, and it was scandalous.
If they hadn't whacked it into the keeper's arms, I think
Van der Sar didn't hear the whistle either. He carried on.
Yeah, I think they all carried on. Well, I'd forgotten, actually, about the... I know this sounds almost ridiculous thing to say, that the two goals being scored because of the 30 seconds
per goal.
Because by the law, when the referee deems it time up, he can blow whenever. The only time when he has to add... the only occasion he has to add time on to the end of the game is for a penalty.
Yeah, okay.
So he can blow up. Even if he goes out for a corner, he can blow up.
Right.
So the referee's obviously done that. But I think where Moyes was annoyed was because the time hadn't been added for the goals.
Would you remember it happened last season as well? Colton Cole scored a goal, and it was like as it was leaving his boot, the ref blew up.
Mad. Just ridiculous. Mad.
But that is the laws. That is the
law. But they don't, though, do they? They always blow up when it's in the air over the centre circle.
Don't have to. They can blow. You know.
But you see Richard Gough on Goals on Sunday.
Richard Gough?
Yeah,
he said the most inappropriate things I've ever heard a person say as well.
he was so candid. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, what did he say?
We were talking about Brian Laudrup, and obviously the awful thing that's happened to him. He's been diagnosed with cancer recently. He said that he was on the phone to Andy Gorham, and they were going, "Oh, should have been us getting that, not him." It's like, what?
Because he was better at football. I don't understand how it works.
Just weird.
But he made a point just in relation to the Everton Manchester United situation where he said, would that have happened at Old Trafford if it was the other way around? And I know it's a bit of a cliche, but if United were on the attack there and they were 3-3 and they were 3-1 and they went back to 3-3 and they were on the break like that, would the referee have blown up at Old Trafford? I wouldn't have thought he would have done.
He was very candid as well, and you know, I don't want to sound like I'm slagging off Richard Gough there, because he was actually quite an interesting guest.
Oh, he definitely was. Yeah, great. It was
good,
great.
Good show, actually. goals on
Sunday. It's decent. It is decent, yeah.
Oh, it does what it says on the tin.
But it depends on the guest, though, Jim. Like, all these things, it depends on the guest.
But let's
like
not...
Show.
One day, listeners. Let's not take away the brilliant game it was.
Mm. Oh, was it awesome?
Fantastic, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I thought Berbatov played very well.
He did. He almost scored an absolute beauty.
Oh, with a volley.
A volley over his shoulder. Yeah. God.
Yeah, and the goal he did score had real panache, didn't
he? Yeah, he's got a lot of class.
Sort of
it's obvious thing to say.
If you were to try and do it on FIFA, for example, you probably need three hands. Yeah. It's just amazing stuff.
I heard a couple of people say, well, obviously, you know, they're going to rue not playing Rooney. And I thought, well,
they should have for the headline.
Yeah, exactly.
It makes sense.
They should have won.
Yeah, no, they were 3-1 up.
Ferguson will be seething.
What are they saying? They should have played Rooney as a defender.
I think
I genuinely think that where does it all end? You know what I mean? Like he's basically done something wrong. He's done something wrong later. Sometime,
yeah.
He's done something wrong there, or not done something wrong, whatever. Due to something off field, he's, you know, in the manager's taking the decision, and I think that's ridiculous, to be honest, to be frank. He's something that's happened off the field has affected his performance on the field directly and just precluded him from being involved in proceedings. Now, that's surely, you can't stand by your player when you're just completely going against a contract that, you know,
you shouldn't be bringing the club into dispute, etc.
But I don't know. Arteta was particularly, again, candid about the whole sort of thing. He said he's really surprised. I mean, he's always had a bad affair at Everton when he's come back and stuff, but he's always played through it, and he's always played very well.
Do you think that was taken into account, the fact that it was Goodison Park, because he's got to go to Liverpool next week?
Yeah,
you can't do it forever.
No,
Ferguson said he's going to play on Tuesday night. Sorry, we're recording the Monday, so tomorrow night. So he's, like you say,
it's ridiculous. He's a footballer.
Did you hear the chant that the Everton fans were going to sing?
Is it publishable?
Yeah.
Go on.
This is inspired. It's cruel, but inspired. They were going to sing No Woman, No Kai.
Oh, that's not very nice, is it, Mark?
It isn't nice.
I enjoyed, was it Manchester United 2 had a proposal on West Bromwich Albion, I think it was?
It was, and Go on.
Some bloke got down on one knee.
Was it not Julian Dix?
That's right, yeah.
Was it Julian Dix?
Yeah. Shut up, was it?
No. I think it was.
Shut up.
Was it?
No,
it
certainly
looked like
it.
It looked like it. And they were singing, you don't know what you're doing.
You don't know what you're doing.
Why was Dix doing that at West Brom?
Well, no idea, but it looked like him.
No.
Right, so a man who looks like Julian Dix got married.
It was Julian Clary.
And it was a great chant, though.
It was a lovely little chant.
Even more unlikely. Whenever Tim Cahill scores, I always think of you, Pete.
Yeah, Did he do a celebration where he punched the corner flag?
He's a good header.
He's great, one goal, one assist.
He's got a good heading record, I think, hasn't he?
Okay. Oh, absolutely right.
And ability.
The cushion header back towards Arteta was inspired.
But you're not a fan of his, though, Pete. So
just he speaks very highly of you, though, Pete.
So 2 points definitely dropped for United. I mean, that is...
Well, it was a really, really sort of end-to-end game in a sense, because Everton actually came out really, really strong.
They
did really well, and then to go down as they did and then recover was
they never stop battling.
A modern classic.
Glad for them to get a point there as well, because they've not had the best start.
Man, you can't drop any more points for me. even this early, they can't.
Chelsea won it already.
Newcastle dropped points at home to Blackpool.
They did, yes.
There was
some inspired goalkeeping this weekend.
To be fair,
my word, he was incredible. Absolutely incredible.
He qualifies to play for Scotland as well, does Jilks.
Mm. Yeah.
DJ Campbell scored.
That was a good finish. Good legs, good feet.
Yeah. I feel an affinity with him, because it's what I might have been if I was a DJ.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
No, none of us can argue with
that. But him, Cudicini, Reina, they all had brilliant matches.
Reina,
Rob Green.
Superb.
Oh, no, once again. It's just like, we said this before, didn't we, when Chelsea thumped West Brom at home. It's like, Chelsea are going to score lots of goals no matter what. Just don't give them.
Yeah, yeah. They don't need your help.
I tell you what, though, Petr Cech knowingly lobbed.
He was.
Yeah, Scott Parker.
Beautiful. And he knew exactly where he was going to put it. It was the way that he loved.
We've either spoken about this before on the show, or I've emailed a listener about this with something, but there is something beautiful about a player scoring a screamer and then just walking away.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, when they've got an absolute belter that's basically meaningless.
Yeah. Like, can you remember in the World Cup, who was it that you scored that goal for Italy? Absolute beautiful. Pagliarella.
Yeah.
That was an absolute peach. It reminded me a bit of that. But Parker deserves... I don't want to be disrespectful to West Ham. I've got no I don't dislike him or like him really, but Parker deserves better than West Ham. He deserves to be at a club who's challenging for things.
Yeah,
because he's a great player.
Well, I think we're still seeing the after effects of his move to Chelsea.
He should have gone to Spurs. He should have gone to Spurs when he had that opportunity, and he didn't. And he went back to West Ham via Newcastle, and his stock was so low, just didn't get a chance.
West Ham.
But he was at Newcastle as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, but and not back to West Ham.
Pete should have gone to that other podcast when he had the opportunity. Bobby Zamora.
No, gutting.
I thought of you.
Broken his ankle.
Yeah.
Oh, he just as you know, he was just starting to look like he would break into the England side, and so on.
Don't use that word.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
His operation was successful though. I don't think it was.
But he's aiming for January, isn't he? As a comeback. So it's maybe not as bad as first thought.
Yeah, there was certainly like 2 years, wasn't it?
Well, I even heard it might have ended his career because the ligaments were damaged as well.
Right. Well, yeah, he's hoping January, which would be
decent.
Something, yeah. But Fulham do have a player in Dembele.
We spoke
about before.
He can hit the ball so straight.
I thought that.
I mean, slightly fortuitous, the two goals, but still, and he looks as though he settled in straight away there. Mm.
What do you think of the challenge by Henry on Zamora then?
Oh, I didn't think it was particularly malicious or anything.
But he has been malicious in the past, is what I'm saying.
Well, he goes in hard, doesn't he?
You've got to judge each challenge on its merits.
But Zamora's foot got caught under the leg. You know, it wasn't an impact injury in a sense. Do you know what I mean?
Well, it makes me feel bad, and the reason it makes me feel bad is because a player's been badly injured. But a couple of weeks ago, we were sort of having a bit of a laugh and a joke about Henry putting the boot in on Joey Barton.
You
can't really have it both ways, you know, because if Joey Barton had been horrifically injured, then we would have been like, oh, you know. So it's a bit two faced, I think.
Well, I don't know, it's a strange one, though, isn't it? Because it's different because he did target Barton far more than he targeted Zamora.
But everyone was making a bit of a joke about it, weren't they?
Yeah, but the thing with it was like 5 or 6 times. He'd was obviously targeting him. Had he been doing that to Zamora and then broken his ankle, that's a different thing, isn't it? But it's not like.
But who's to say Barton wouldn't have job? But how did Carl Henry know that Joey Barton wasn't going to get injured?
Well, he didn't. That's the thing, and you take that risk, don't you?
Mm. Jan scores on his Sunderland debut.
Goal that was.
Lovely goal.
Nice little dance as well.
Mm. Yeah.
Like that.
Nice volley.
Do you remember when Ghana were doing lots of dance celebrations in the World Cup, and it just didn't look right when Prince Boateng was getting involved?
That's right.
So what are you doing?
Jean's got to be looking at Catamol thinking, what is wrong with that bloke?
Even Steve Bruce came out and went, I don't know what to say, I can't defend him.
Him and Jean need to room together on the way trip just to balance it out a little bit. Catamol's missed it off 48 times in his career.
Oh my God.
Twice this season.
We're only a month in.
I do like Catamol as a player. It's a difficult one.
There's rumours some of the big clubs have been looking at him.
It's a difficult one because it's like the whole, I know it's a cliche, but it's like the whole Roy Keane thing. He's got a side to his game, but that makes him so competitive.
Yeah.
He just needs to learn how to curb it.
It's a different thing in this game though. It was just stupid.
Oh, it was
too unnecessary. Booking.
The second one was absolutely needless. It was like laughable. If I was a Sunderland fan watching that, I'd just been laughing. What are you doing?
Jan's a pop star, isn't he, back in Ghana?
He is, yeah.
Hopefully here.
Yeah, he is.
Have you not seen it?
No, I've missed this.
A couple of videos on them internets.
Yeah.
Pop star?
No, what would you call this?
Like a Carlos Tevez style thing.
All right.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
No, I thought you meant he had a whole entire
vanity project, Jim. Vanity project.
Yeah, exactly.
Not a dare job.
That's right, yeah. Think Andy Cole back in the day.
I'm back from Edinburgh. There's no need to keep bringing it up.
In the Championship, there was talking about Everton's wonderful comeback. Burnley.
Pompey? No. That was 0-0 again.
Have they come back from...
They've bounced back from defeat, in a way, by getting a point.
Right, well, we're not talking about them.
Fair enough.
I think it's for the best. it was Burnley at home to Preston.
Yeah. Wonderful game.
They were 3-1 down, with Burnley, and they scored on 84, 88 and 90.
Is it fair to say Darren Ferguson was happy with that?
His big league of gentlemen fist is all screwed up. There should be
some kind of rule where if you are more than two goals or more down and it goes into the 80th minute and you manage to not lose the game, then a pitch invasion is allowed.
What a match.
Ferguson, do you see what happened with his player that got sent off? His player got sent off with a second yellow for not taking a throw-in quick enough.
Yeah.
It was negligible, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was probably a bit harsh on balance.
Probably.
It was harsh. No, but I'm just saying, just to set the scene, it was harsh. I agree with that. But Darren Ferguson then said in the post-match interview, it's the most appalling refereeing decision I've ever seen in my life.
I don't know.
It wasn't Schumacher against Battersea.
I was going to say, Rivaldo getting sent off.
Exactly.
Rivaldo getting the turn.
Kaká getting sent off.
But it's still, you know, I'm sure Darren Ferguson wasn't at any of those games, to be fair to
him. He's Alex Ferguson's son. Like,
what I was going to say was, Jim,
he's just seen a few.
He blames the referee for everything. I just don't know where he's got it from.
John Parkin scored in that match as well. It had everything.
Can you use his full name, please?
What?
John the Beast Parker.
Tracy's goal for Preston was really, really good. Iwalumor, his hat trick. He's got three very decent goals.
There were some great goals in that game.
Yeah.
But there were so many, the chances are statistically they were going to be
good. I was going to say. Forest drew at home with Millwall. Forest, 4 points from five games.
As we've said so many times about the Championship, you can almost get promoted one season and then get relegated the next. It's so unpredictable. Yeah. And obviously, you know, Forest will probably sort
it's
of
like
pick
the Argentinian class. Or something.
Yeah. It actually is. It's a fair comparison.
Well, Forrest's problem is Billy Davis is a massive egotistical twat.
I do feel sorry for Forrest fans because they did have a decent. They should have gone through automatically, I think, last season.
Well, he was saying towards the end of last season that, you know, in a way he hoped they didn't go up because he thought they weren't ready. It's like, got your wish.
I hate the way he just flutters his eyelashes. I think that someone rightly put it recently at every other club that comes along. Mm. You know, and he uses it as leverage to get what he wants. At his own club, and he's got a track record of doing that, you know. And I don't think it's beneficial. Well, it isn't beneficial to the club, and I think personally, it's part of the reason they've started so poorly.
QPR and Cardiff have started very well. 13 points after five games, I think it is. QPR beat Middlesbrough 3-0 at home.
And Middlesbrough fancied as well.
Yeah, and Cardiff beat Hull at home 2-0.
Well, Middlesbrough, it's obviously we've said before, it's like they've got all these SPL players.
They've signed the whole of Scotland.
Yeah, and it's like almost
it's like Braveheart.
Yeah,
just like it.
Well, people always say the Championship is sort of like the SPL, but apparently not.
No.
Well, higher attendances. In League One, Southampton.
Necessary.
It's a much bigger population in it.
Yeah, it is.
You do the math. Well, thank you. League One, Southampton have appointed Nigel Adkins as the new manager. Is he going to be the man to get them back in?
They're very excited
league?
About it, aren't they?
Well, Cortese might change his mind again by the time this comes out.
He's going to play amazing.
Did he actually say that?
Yeah.
Cortese gave him the job.
Oh, sorry, James.
I forget who it's come from.
Nicola Cortese.
I don't know if it was Cortese or someone speaking on his behalf, but it's like we interview loads of people for the job. He's the only man we wanted. Like, well just interview him then. Firstly,
what are you interviewing me for? Then I really
for a bit of interview experience.
Yeah. Didn't Martin O'Neill? Wasn't he up for
it? He was involved, but Martin O'Neill. Well, the reports I've heard, and if they're wrong, then forgive me. But I know a couple of people well placed down there, and someone said to me that O'Neill was interviewed, and got to the point of being offered the job, was given assurances, and then O'Neill found out they were interviewing other people for the job as well, and threw his rattle out.
Wow!
And then they offered the job to Nigel Adkins. Then they took it away again because they weren't sure, apparently. And then they offered it to him again.
Mm. So, well, yeah, didn't they want him? Didn't you? Were you saying that they wanted him to resign and then sign?
Right. Something like that.
It was very just a little bit. It just sounded a little bit dodgy.
Very. Oh, wait. In my opinion, Cortese is.
Perhaps they've just put this story out about only offering the job to Adkins, so if Martin O'Neill pipes up, it'll just sound mental.
Yeah. But if Martin O'Neill has got a mental side to him, that's
of course he does.
Yeah. Isn't he like really into murder, as we've said before?
He loves his crime novels.
Not doing it.
He's
pretty sure he got 2/3 of a way through a criminology degree, and he famously sat in on almost every session of the Fred West trial as well.
Wow. I'd love to see him on CSI. Okay. taking his sunglasses off, this is a fucking mess, ain't it?
I'm sure we talked about this before, I mean, a long time ago.
Well.
I lose track of what we talked about. Crime, 600 shows on.
Crime and indecision on the South Coast.
Sounds like a novel.
It does, yeah.
The Matt Letizia story.
Good. Let's have a high five.
No.
Okay.
We're not congratulating ourselves anymore, Mark.
Oh, forgive me. In the SPL, Celtic marked. Yeah, good enough. Celtic marked the 25th anniversary of Jock Steen's death there with a 3-0 win over Hearts. Mm. Although Hearts manager Jim Jefferies, as we said at the start of the show.
I'm thinking of the foul-mouthed Australian comic.
Yeah, he probably would do a similar thing.
There are similarities.
Well, he's facing a charge of bringing the game into disrepute on top of a ban after being sent to the stand against Celtic because he was protesting the first goal he was offside, which actually wasn't, and the second goal as well, which wasn't again. Although the Hearts, the Slovakian keeper Marian Keller had a great game for Hearts.
He did.
The good thing about the Jim Jefferies thing here was that it was one of those rare but beautiful moments, just in life in general, where someone's so mad they can't speak. You know, it's like a Bob Hoskins in Long Good Friday. He was like
that. Scottish.
And he was still fuming in the stands. He was still fuming. Yeah. Mark McGee had a real go at someone as well. And For Aberdeen, yeah.
Oh, and I should say, Paddy McCourt's goal for Celtic. Archie Gimmel-esque.
He loves to cut inside, Paddy McCourt. He's older than you think. How old do you think he is?
I don't know.
He's 26.
Is he?
I thought he was a lot younger than that. Yeah, he's 26.
He's got an old man's name, to be fair.
Absolutely right, yeah. Absolutely right.
Exactly, yeah. One does indeed. Right, it's time to go to the continent. unbelievable scenes in the Primera Liga. Barcelona have lost at home to newly promoted Hercules 2-0 with Nelson Valdez scoring both goals.
Have you heard his story?
I mean, it's really worth Sid Lowe's written an excellent piece in The Guardian about him, which is definitely worth checking out because it is incredible. But
it's even about 6 years ago, isn't it? He was living in a stairwell.
I think it was 9 years ago he was living in a stairwell. He's homeless.
He's from Paraguay, isn't
he? Uruguay.
Yeah. But wasn't it Uruguay?
Go on, please.
No, it's Paraguay.
I believe the stairwell belonged to a football club that he actually played for.
Yeah.
So that's right. He was just living there. And he 15 years old? Well, he was even saying, like, I'm not really that good a player.
he said that after the World Cup.
Yeah, I had to just do something. He made a promise to his mum, didn't he, that he would score in the World Cup because she was so upset when Paraguay went out.
He sent France in 98.
Yeah.
Yes.
He sends £10,000 home every month. Yeah. According to Sid Lowe, a whole village relies on his money for income.
He was flown over by a German businessman or something who saw him while he was on holiday or something and he fancied him, and he flew him over to
Bremen.
Fantastic.
But he buys like Christmas presents for 1,500 children or something.
That's right. But I mean, Barcelona, large parts of that game were almost literally pitching tents in Hercules' half. And they couldn't see Trezeguet play. He missed a sitter, but he played. Yeah.
They had 80% possession, Barcelona.
Xavi had 75% of that.
Yeah, yeah.
But the second goal.
See what
brilliant.
Happens when Zlatan's not there?
It's true.
Results.
Well, you'll come on to
him. Don't worry, we've not missed him out. But absolutely incredible. I mean, we were talking last week about how when Real Madrid dropped points, we thought, oh, blimey, you know, Barcelona hardly dropped any. Mm.
But our league has literally got to that stage now.
Well, which, you know. Madrid, Real won 1-0 at home to Osasuna.
They weren't particularly convincing, though, were they?
Well, they've got the win, though.
Otsil looked great.
Yeah.
It looks like he's just settling in very quickly.
And Khedira played as well, didn't he?
Do you know what? It's quite funny, actually. Bayern Munich, I think people were surprised that Bayern Munich never tried to sign Khedira and Ozil.
Yeah.
Because they went to Real Madrid. And the director of sport there, Nerlinger, he said that they decided not to bid for the pair because they weren't sure whether the two of them would be able to maintain the top level they achieved in South Africa. and this real sort of sour grapes, this. He said, we're not afraid of Real Madrid. When Bayern Munich won a player, we're absolutely able to close the deal and sign him.
Why didn't you sign those players?
Exactly.
You've made up a reason.
Because Real pretty much sign whoever they want.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say, they are a bigger club than you. I know you're massive, and you know I am available, but... okay, well, let's move on.
You've got one big move left in you, Marcus.
Do you think so?
The age of 27 or 28, yeah, you got it.
Very kind of you.
Breakfast TV awaits.
Breakfast radio. Steve McLaren's struggling. They've lost the first few games there.
Have you seen what he said? Like, it's basically something along the lines of I didn't think he'd be this hard.
Well, I won that one in Holland.
Yeah,
you know. How hard could it be? I thought to myself.
Not even a translation issue there, are they?
Yeah.
He's still speaking in Dutch as well. It's amazing. He's not got a German one yet.
No, the Dutch accent.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
That's not a way to endear yourself to anybody.
No, exactly.
Oh, dear. Yeah, well, it's funny that the Bundesliga, it's quite an amazing start. Hoffenheim atop. Stuttgart and Schalke. And Cologne and Wolfsburg down the bottom. St. Pauli, 13th.
Yeah, they lost 1-0, didn't they?
It's
strange because in France as well, I think Lyon, Marseille, and a few other sides. I'm not sure it is Marseille, but a lot of the big sides are down the bottom half of the table. It's a funny time of season, isn't it? But particularly weird in Germany that it's happening to so many of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you see the first goal for Dortmund against Wolfsburg?
No.
Absolute screamer. I forget who scored it, but I recommend looking it up on FootyTube. It's just a brilliant goal. It's just one of those ones where it just goes so straight into the top corner.
How
do you do that?
Did St. Pauli lose to Cologne? They lost to Cologne 1-0, and Cologne's nickname is the Billy Goats. It's up there with the Flying Donkeys for me.
Absolutely.
I like Dortmund. See, I remember those new chaps were when Dortmund were a huge European club. They won the Champions League.
Yeah.
And they've got the biggest, is it the Westfalen Stadium?
It's the biggest stand, is it, in the world?
That's right, yeah. One side of
the... Oh, that's a nice little fact.
Hopefully a trip to Dortmund, Lord Ramble. Anyway, let's move on to Serie A. AC Milan, otherwise known as Milan, lost 2-0 away to newly promoted Cesena.
I was thinking about this, right?
Yes.
I know you're not meant to call them Inter Milan, because that's not what they're called, but people do it anyway. Yeah. No one ever says Inter Milan. Why is it only
AC? Because the city is Milan.
Mm.
But AC Milan, Milan are called Milan.
All right, so it's pronounced different.
No one calls the city of Milan Milan.
Well, it's Milano, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just the team that's called Milan.
Right. The reason why they're called Milan is because it was set up by an Englishman, hence he dropped the O.
Ah.
Yeah. Like Athletic Bilbao.
Yeah, we've discussed this before, haven't we?
We've discussed it again.
We've discussed everything.
I'm disgusted.
Again.
yeah, so they had Ibrahimovic up front with Ronaldinho and
Pato. I don't think Rubinho played. Started.
He came on sort of shortly after half time.
Well, they played a 4-3-3, and an honourable mention to Stephen Appiah, who played for.
He did, yeah.
Yeah, but they started with a 4-3-3, and I was thinking about this when I saw a bit of the game. The three midfielders they played were Ambrosini, Gattuso, and Pirlo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
creaky.
Have they got enough running in them for the three they're playing up front?
Yeah, I mean, Gattuso's certainly used to.
Gattuso's 32, Pirlo's 31 on his way to 32, well, and Ambrosini's 33.
I think the trouble is, with that front three with Milan, none of them are looking to get in behind. None of them are looking to finish off a move.
Or drop back.
Well, or track back.
Can you just bounce it off my shin?
Zlatan kept sort of dropping into the hole. And he kept doing that classic thing where he would just get it and then just sort of look around. And to be fair, he would often pick a pass, although as the game went on, that would close up. But he would just knock it and then just admire the pass, and he would never follow it up. And so they didn't have anyone trying to get in the box. So Pato was the only one who looked quite likely.
He looks decent.
He did look good. He had a great
run at one point in that game.
I think he's going
to. Oh, he did.
Yeah,
he's a good player anyway.
I think he's going to have a good season. But the trouble was Ronaldinho. I don't know what's happened to him really. But
food.
Yeah,
Ronaldinho
and Ibrahimovic and so on. He's only 30, is he? Every time they got the ball, they were holding it up. So the midfielders would then come forward, and so they'd have loads. Yeah, exactly. So they'd all eventually get there, and then they didn't have the cutting edge, and they get hit so easily on the break.
Well, Chesney's second goal was a typical break. Absolutely,
wasn't it?
It was a really quick break.
Really incisive pass.
Both their goals were quite nice.
But do you reckon Ibra just sort of said at some point, "Look, just win a penalty, and I'll definitely score it."
Absolutely, missed the penalty. Yeah. Cool. Well, why is he taking a penalty?
He did an outrageous bit of skill during that game.
Yeah,
as well, unnecessary because he kind of held the ball on his foot. Kind of in front of a defender, and then just sort of dragged it down, just flicked it about a bit, and he's still like bamboozled the guy. It's like there is no need to just hold it on your foot like that. You're just showing off.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, that's part of it. I like it. I'm happy with it.
The more people hate him, the more I like it.
Yeah, I like it because he doesn't play for my team. If he played for my team, I wouldn't like that.
I think if Ibrahimovic sticks a firework up his arse, then he could have a good season. But they really need something. I mean, they look more likely when Inzaghi came on, actually. I mean, you're talking of a 35, 36
but he's stronger. Exactly what you're calling out for from what you said earlier. He finish a move off all day.
That's what I'm saying.
It's the only thing he can do.
But you've got five players there, the two boys on the wings and the three midfielders who are going to hold it up, who are trying to pick a pass, who are trying to. You need someone up there, and Ibrahimovic is not the man to do that.
It's a very disjointed team.
I'd like to say that it's nice to see Cassano back in the Italian side. And I had to say, we said this the other week, but do you remember Superman who Mario Ferrari?
Oh, Cassano's biggest fan.
Yeah, who jumped on the pitch at the World Cup.
He got banned from football, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Because he had a T-shirt saying, "I told you so," to Marcello Lippi.
Well, he got back in the stadium, did he?
Well, when Italy beat the Faroe Islands 5-0, I think it was 5-0 the other week in Florence. He'd hidden a bathroom in the stadium.
Why did he get in the stadium
Mario
to hide in the bathroom?
Can this be true?
He's so dedicated.
No, he did. I saw it.
There's a video.
Well, I don't know about the bathroom, but and he ran onto the pitch and he ran up to Cassano and gave him a little kiss on the cheek.
Cassano loved it, though, didn't he?
Cassano loved it. And he turned around to the manager and gave him the thumbs up to Prandelli.
And he had a little grin as well.
Yeah.
So he's been banned and now he's got more access.
And now he's actually kissing footballers. That's how much of a piss take this whole thing is.
Amazing.
Yeah. It's like a league of these guys with that Jimmy Jump, Carl Power as well.
Yeah. Is Power the one who got in the United team photo?
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a good one. That was a way to buy in.
Yeah, there's a one. That's a great shout.
Yeah.
There's the one who basically streaks every sporting event. Is that the same guy? The guy who did the snooker and the golf and that's
no,
another.
He's just
that's a different guy.
Oh, I know the guy. I mean, he did the tennis as well.
He's not a football specialist.
No, he does all sports.
Yeah, he's cross sport.
Yeah.
I mean, people say to me, "You've got too much time in your hands." They've got too much time in their hands.
Yeah. At least they're doing something with their time.
Well, it involves me being
naked,
nude.
Get your naked torso on the television.
Yeah.
In Serie A, though, the players are planning to go on strike on the weekend of the 25th and the 26th of September. Perhaps maybe they're tired already. No, there's a protest to protest against the proposal from Serie A club presidents that players in the final year of their contract are going to be forced to accept transfers if the buying club is offering equal or better pay.
There's much more to it than that. I think there's 8 points in total.
Right, but that's the base. That's the sort of the bare bones.
And if you don't accept, you've got to buy your contract out yourself. Apparently,
That is ridiculous.
It all stems from last summer when they didn't renew the deal with the players' union and the presidents. They didn't renew the deal. They couldn't agree on this. So they let it go, and now it's lapsed.
Mm. Well, the recent example is Fabio Grosso, who apparently turned down a move from Juventus to Milan after the two clubs had reached an agreement. And under the Serie A club president's proposal, Grosso would have been forcibly moved to Milan.
It's a bit crazy, really.
They've got to close it up, surely.
It's not fair on the player. It doesn't matter that it's still a decent club where you can play football, especially if you're getting older and you're in the last year of your contract. You've got a family to think about, you know? Location is important to you.
Absolutely right.
That's not fair.
Agree.
Right, shall we go around the rest of the world? We're going to.
This is more glamorous. It sounds. It's not as glamorous as it sounds.
Speaking of glamour and globetrotting, Sven looks like he's got a job in Saudi Arabia.
He has got the best agent in the world. I was saying this earlier. How his ability to sniff out money.
What were those figures you were chucking around? 3 million for?
Well, I can't remember exactly how much he got paid at Ivory Coast, but it was an extortionate amount for effectively 2 months' work in a country where the average wage is 50p a day.
It's almost because he's achieved so little. Since managing England, and I suppose during managing England, but that was sort of very.
He did it right for him, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was a very sort of high profile job. It's like he's done so little since then. Everyone just goes, "Oh yeah, now he managed England." Just like they're not even aware of the things he's done they've been ridiculous.
Like, he's so good at sniffing out money. I just want to go on a beach with a metal detector with him. I'd be finding like.
He's probably got one up his nose.
Yeah. Oh dear.
But he's gone to Al Hilal, hasn't he? Apparently,
he has.
Is that confirmed or is talking?
I think it has.
Oh, Hilal money. Oh, hello money.
Yeah, see what he done there.
Hilal.
Yeah. 1.2 million quid for 1 year's work. It's not bad, is it?
Yeah. My giddy aunt. Where else have we got? Very sad news from Uruguay. Extremely sad news. Diego Rodriguez, who's a young Uruguayan player, died in a car crash, only 22. Played for the Uruguayan side, Nacional. And
big
Uruguayan
team. One of the biggest teams in South
the
America.
Uruguayan Football Association suspended all the matches at all levels last weekend. So, sad news there. In America, David Beckham has made his return and was booked within 5 minutes of coming on.
He's Rusty. Knocking on that door.
Rusty?
Was it per chance by a really off the pace late challenge? Can we confirm or deny that?
Perhaps.
Did someone
furiously
land on the floor and just kick somebody?
And then ruin the World Cup for England?
Yeah.
Do you remember the Sun?
How
dare you? Do you remember the Sun headline when that happened?
Yeah.
10 brave lions,
and one stupid
boy.
Kid.
Yeah, kid or boy. Yeah.
Did you see.
West Ham fans took it well.
Yeah.
So did Victoria!
Oh. I'm going to drastically move.
Unbelievable.
So much so, we're going to go to Morocco.
Yeah.
Mm. Did you see
I love this.
Go on.
It's going to be a Ramble Tube staple
absolutely.
For months to come.
It's been doing the rounds already. It's so brilliant. It's basically in Morocco, a guy took a penalty. The goalkeeper saved it, right, and just turned away, giving it the big and yeah, I saved it, but didn't realise the ball was spinning and span back into the goal.
Yes,
it's just so good because you can see the initial shot, you see the striker's reaction to it going.
The keeper's celebrating.
He's probably pointing at it to the ref. Look, I'm not touching it.
He's just sort of pleading with the ref to give it, and he just sort of just nods. Like, as if to go, yeah.
It's a goal. Yeah, the ball hasn't stopped moving.
The referee is just so blasé about it. Like, it's such a normal thing. The more you watch it, the more you sort of just...
How many times have you watched it?
4 or 5. Like, the more you just look at the arrogance of the goalkeeper, check he's actually saved it.
The first time that it actually happened, I wasn't sure what was happening. Because I wasn't sure who was the aggressor, who was... It was on the upper, having the upper hand, upper hand, so to speak. Yeah. Still didn't get it right.
You're right, though, but that's completely contrary to what presumably goalkeeping coaches teach goalkeepers.
Yeah.
Don't just save it and then fucking do one. Make sure you've got the ball.
Have you ever seen the footage from, an old match with Cantona? I can't remember who he's playing against. He turns up to take a penalty and he dinks it and the ball sort of gets caught in the surface. It was quite wet. Mm. And so the keeper dives one way and then he gets up and then saves it.
Does he?
Yeah. Yeah, quite old.
Is that keeper who did that for that penalty in Morocco? Yeah. He's never made a double save in his life. Every time he makes a save, he just runs off. Oh, did you see that? Who saw me?
Oh, do we get a goal for that?
Yeah.
That's not how it works.
Oh dear. Luke, have my eyes deceived me, or are you standing in Diego Corner?
I was sitting next to you, Marcus. Now I'm somewhere else.
Oh, everyone's favourite corner's back.
Favourite ethereal corner.
I bet everyone thought that because Diego Maradona hasn't got a job at the moment, that
he's reckon he's signing on.
Well, you're the expert. Diego Maradona is apparently up for taking the reins at Portugal. Carlos Queiroz has been sacked, as we know. Mm. One of Maradona's assistants, one of his many...
Is Queiroz cracking up?
One of his myriad assistants, Alejandro Mancuso, said, "It's true. Diego and I already talked about it. It's a project that would please us greatly. He has the will and the total availability."
Total availability.
But sounds like a terrible Arnie film.
So far, and I hope you're all sitting down for this, he's not been contacted.
Can I
just perhaps venture something to the rest of you guys? Now, you guys will know that Queiroz has been relieved of his position as Portugal manager recently.
Yeah.
Does anyone know what one of the main reasons for that was?
I do, yes.
Interference in the drug test. How would getting Diego Maradona in solve that problem? Think about that, Portuguese FA, before you make your decision.
This is clearly all bollocks, and it's not going to happen, but we've got to talk about it.
Yeah.
Apparently, the assistant, what's his name there?
Alejandro Mancuso.
Yes, apparently he was saying that Diego and I would love to manage the likes of Cristiano Ronaldo and all. I bet they would, Pete.
Yeah.
I bet they flipping well would.
I'll be back in a minute.
Messi wasn't good enough.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know. I've got an email, Marcus.
You haven't, have you?
I bloody well have, you know. It's from Matt Sanders and his mate, Matt Hodinott.
Do they only hang around with people with the same name as each other?
And that is true.
Do they share an email account?
Maybe, I don't know. Football Ramble Hall.
Oh.
We're both research scientists. Please don't fall asleep just yet.
Is this a bragging letter?
I'm a research scientist. I've achieved exactly what my parents wanted.
And we currently have Pete's brain in
a
jar.
Don't pop at him.
Sorry.
He's emailed in.
I'll judge the email on its merits. But
right, okay. We work at University College London, so they could pop round and kick you in. Luke,
yeah. Oh, they're research scientists. I doubt it.
In their
they'll build a robot.
What
for
you
it.
Could take two, could you? They've probably got access to scalpels and chemicals.
Yeah, true.
Throw acid in your eyes.
Please continue.
And they basically work in the Institute of Healthy Aging. In the lab,
this is made up.
In the lab, we work on flies and worms to study aging and its related diseases. I can hear Kanu in the air somewhere. I know this is coming. I'm looking down the email. Can't see the word Kanu. I'm amazed. We're able to manipulate the worms or fries genetically or with drugs so that they live healthy, longer lives. The great thing about this work is that you can make worms slash flies live longer at a particular age.
I thought you meant worms slash flies, like you could put them together and have flying worms.
Call
for example,
them wise.
For example, an equivalent to a 25-year-old for longer, so to speak.
Okay,
One question to you is, if this work could be extended to humans and more specifically footballers, what players, past or present, would you choose to do this on, and at what age would you have extended their life for? For me, I would choose Dennis Bergkamp in the 97-98 season when he was about 28 years old. His season with Arsenal was incredible, winning the double, scoring a hat-trick against Leicester, which earned him first, second and third in match of the day of the world competition.
Yeah.
Also, his incredible World Cup. Who can forget the goal against Argentina? Dennis Bergkamp.
Yeah.
Love the Dutch master. There we go. just as a note, no, Kanu is not our prototype or any other than Nigerian players, but maybe another rival lab is using him in a human trial. What player would you do, Luke?
I was going to say Kanu in the interwar period.
During the French Revolution.
yeah.
When he was having that kickabout on in the trenches.
Yeah, I'd say that.
No,
that was
really,
that was, really, yeah,
that was
his
Christmas
pomp.
Day game.
Yeah, his pomp.
Michael Owen when he was about 18.
Oh, Harry Winter's in.
Come on, Owen during the 98 World Cup.
Harry Winter was trying to engineer Owen a move to Villa the other day on Twitter.
Oh my
God. What is wrong with him?
Yeah. Is he just trying to be his agent?
All right. Yeah.
Did he make that portfolio? Henry Winter wrote it.
Yeah.
I was about to say Roger Miller during the 1990 World Cup. He was still really old.
Yeah. I mean, for me, to answer the question seriously, I would say it's like players that I wasn't old enough. I'm not LDA old enough to know. So people like, well, someone like maybe like De Stefano or something.
I tell you, actually, a player who sort of suddenly fell from grace, who I used to love watching, Gazzica Mendieta.
Oh yeah.
And do you remember when he was at Valencia?
Yeah, I do.
That team was superb. Imperious.
Yeah, and then he he move to Middlesbrough after Valencia, or did he move to Barcelona?
Lazio, I think he moved to.
He went to Lazio for a lot of money,
and then to Barca.
Yeah, and he's been to Liverpool as well.
Right, yeah, because but he never really was quite the same. But Mendieta for Valencia.
Interesting feature, perhaps for another show in the future.
It's a great email, by the way.
It is
brilliant.
Interesting feature. It would be Spanish players who move to Italy. It hardly ever seems.
Well,
to
there's
work
a big rivalry between Spain and Italy that we're not so aware of. It's much in the way that I don't think so many people are aware of the sort of England Germany rivalry as we like to think now, because it's more Holland and Germany in Germany that they think of it like that. And apparently the Spanish and Italians really they have quite a lot of rivalry.
Who would you go for with the email, James?
Well, I think I'd go for George Best because he retired quite early, but I don't know if he'd have just pissed it away, mate. It might have made things worse.
God, we've got Alcopops now and everything.
I thought you were going to say George Weyer for some reason.
I have an email.
Go ahead.
Hang on, we didn't do Pete's one, did we?
Zola, Chelsea's picket. Yeah, hold on.
Well done, mate.
Sorry, Pete. This email, Ramble's hurt. Hey, guys, just thought I'd give you an update on the wonderful adventures of Robbie Fowler. He'd be a good contender, actually.
For Liverpool.
Seems to drop off quite a lot.
Yeah, the first bit at Liverpool, not the second one.
Still scored some goals there, didn't he? His ratio was pretty good.
He's been scoring more goals elsewhere as well. And Fowler has, in fact, left the North Queensland Fury after one season, scoring 9 goals. One of them a contender for A League Goal of the Year, and I've seen that goal, and it was brilliant. A lovely, lovely finish.
Oh, the lob over the keeper.
Yes, that one will stick out from Ramble Tube. The speculation around his future at the club was that he was unhappy being named on the subs bench in a game against Brisbane Roar and subsequently sat the game out. At the end of the season, the Fury allegedly ripped up his contract, sounds appropriate, and Fowler has since then said he is suing the Fury and Football Federation Australia, but he is still in the A-League. Fowler at the start of this season signed a deal to play with the Perth Glory, going from one side of the country to the other. At the time of sending this email, 5 rounds into the season, and the Glory are second on the table, with Fowler having scored 2 goals, one of them a penalty and a header just this week to win the game against the Wellington Phoenix, linking up well with former Derby County rejects Andy Todd and Mile Stojovski, I believe that's pronounced.
Cheers, Andy Todd's playing there.
Andy Todd. Cheers, lads. Matt Tilby, Brisbane, Australia. Thank you very much, mate. It's nice to get a little Robbie Fowler update. Yeah. He obviously likes it there because that's his third club in Australia, isn't it?
Yeah. You'd love it. I mean, it's a great lifestyle, isn't it?
Lots of houses.
Spiders. Lots of spiders.
He's already bought every house in Britain, so he used to move somewhere.
Lots more space. I've had a little project recently, lads, that I didn't immediately tell you about. A couple of weeks ago, I was hearing, I think everyone was hearing, that Gerard Houllier was supposed to be moving to Aston Villa. Since of course happened. Now, I went on to Wikipedia and added a club to his fine history as a football manager. I added the fifth division side, semi-pro sort of
fifth
amateur.
Fifth tier
in French football, Carquefou. Yeah. I think that's how you pronounce it. I added it to his Wikipedia page like about a week and a half
deviant.
Before.
Yeah.
I am, that is my title.
To see
if anybody picked up on it, basically. Because, you know, I mean, Wikipedia's a great resource.
You're abusing it.
Yeah, and you want to ruin it for everyone.
Pretty much. So, anyway, I put Kakavu was his first club before he went elsewhere. And bearing in mind he started his managerial career at 26, 27.
Yeah, he was young.
This would have made him even younger. So I wrote that he did. Kakavu part time. Two people picked up on it.
You monitored the press.
I monitored who was going to be using that piece of information. One of which was Yahoo Eurosport. They just said that he started his career at Kakavu part time, which is incorrect, completely incorrect.
Yeah.
It's a different part of the country.
Yeah.
Bearing in mind he was a headmaster or something at a school, he would have had to travel a fair whack anyway.
Wow.
And also the Aston Villa website. They also
that is more disappointing for me.
Repeated our lies. My lies.
Don't tell me with this brush.
I'm telling you with this brush.
Surely they've got his CV. Just take it off.
But I like to think that a late night surf from Mr. Hoolier, just surfing his own website, going, "Oh, I'm so pleased to be here. I did not start there. I was not part time manager."
In my head, it's something like the website editor bumps into Hoolier in the corridor at Villa. Sort of goes, "Yeah, I was a big fan of your time." And he's thinking, "What? What are you talking about?
What dick?
Great work, Pete."
By the end of it, he'll be going, "Maybe I did. Maybe I did manage that. Everyone seems to be saying it.
Yeah, did I win anything?" Yeah. Internet terrorist Pete Donaldson. Woo! Good man.
Marvellous.
So watch out, people who get paid for doing this. Yeah. We get paid for this, so, you know what I mean, you can criticise us when we sort of use Wikipedia. Up yours.
We're literally making the news.
Yeah. Making it up.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's profile time.
That's a good time.
And
in my top three favourite times.
Christmas time, yeah.
Birthday time.
Ah. Maybe we had bath time, yeah?
Bath time, yeah. Rare one for me.
Fun time.
It's always fun time when you're around, Marcus.
I thought you said something else there. Starting with an F. Time. What's wrong with you, Marcus?
Now that's enough.
Falafel time.
Alright.
Stop!
Falafel time. Seriously, let's do the profile.
We've got two players coming in today.
Mm.
And all will be revealed.
Let's open both doors.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, is there another one in there?
Double doors.
Hopefully all will be revealed, otherwise there's no point doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't just lead us down the garden path.
I'm an absolute beggar for doing that. Well, I'll tell you the two people we have coming in. Two Uruguayan players. Hector Castro and Dario Silva.
Pompey alumni. This is brilliant. I'm looking forward to this already.
Played in two vastly different eras. But we'll get on with it and you'll see the link as we go. We'll start with Hector Castro.
Oh, the lack of one.
Let's do them in chronological order.
Yeah. Hector Castro.
Well, he is.
If I may. Let's get the most important thing out of the way. He was born on the 29th of November 1904.
63 years before the summer. God, a long time before the summer.
Good mess. He played the majority of his career in Uruguay. It's important to say at the start of this profile that when he was 13 years old, he had an accident involving a saw. And he lost his right arm below the elbow.
I've heard about this guy. Am I right in thinking he basically cut his own arm off
in
an accident?
So, yeah.
He'd be disappointed with that.
Yeah, you'd be pretty annoyed.
That's if you want to be a professional footballer, that is a rubbish start.
Yeah. When you stub your toe, you're annoyed at yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely incredible. So, here he is with only sort of one full arm, and he played as a centre forward and won three national championships with Nacional, one of the big teams in Europe.
Nacional and Peñarol are the two big clubs in Europe. That derby is absolutely ridiculous. There's a legitimate argument to say that it's the biggest derby in world football.
That's right, yeah. Mm. So he won three championships with Nacional and was a member of the Uruguayan team that won the Copa America in 1926 and 1935.
Wow.
And this was at a time, especially when Uruguay and that part of the world was in very much so the hotbed of football talent.
Absolutely right, yeah. They were world leaders, Uruguay.
Up there with the
World Cup twice.
Yeah. Absolutely right.
Well, in 1930, they had the World Cup in Uruguay. And, it's just incredible that a man... I mean, they reached the world... They won the World Cup, of course, in 1930. And there was a guy who was an amputee, effectively, who was in the side, you know.
He played in that World Cup, yeah.
Yeah, he scored. I mean, he scored
in the final.
He did score in the final. He scored on the way to the final, a 1-0 win against Peru in their first match, and then in the final in the summer of 1930 in Montevideo, the capital of Uruguay. It was people say it was a magnificent match. It was 2-1 to Argentina at half time, and they were bitter rivals as well, massive rivals. And Uruguay managed to turn it around 3-2, and then in the last minute he got the goal that finished the Argentinians off.
They think it's all over.
Yeah, he said that with relish, Marcus, like you're sort of enjoying that.
Well, the man's coming into the Hall of Fame.
You've
got to talk him
give
up,
him his due.
His nickname was El Divino Manco, which roughly translates to the one-handed god.
We get a good nickname out of these sort of things.
Yeah. Absolutely. The fans of Nacional absolutely worshipped him. Great physical strength and never say die attitude on the pitch, apparently.
And in life, it seems.
Well, clearly.
If you see pictures of him, he looks tough.
Yeah.
He's got like a big old Roman nose on him, and it looks like he don't make take any shit from anyone.
Absolutely.
The thing is, losing any part of your body, obviously, like the arm, you'd think would be secondary to your feet.
But balance-wise, and actually
just getting purchased, like jumping through defenders and stuff. Yeah. It's so difficult.
I mean, when I have my hair cut, it hurts. Can't imagine what that must be like.
No bones about it. Like. I know people say that you know, footballers aren't tough and stuff, and it's the rugby players that are tough. You had to be tough to be a footballer in the 30s. I mean, the ball itself, if it was a rainy day
before the 90s, really.
Well, it was
in particular back then.
Well, the ball, when it got soaked in water, my granddaddy played a bit of football when he was young. He said that the ball would be almost literally twice as heavy when it was wet.
Well, people died from it, from the repeated knocks to the head. From
they say
the
Jeff Hassel contributed to his death. Yeah.
Well. Talking of heading the ball, apparently there's a little thing. There's a little stories that say that when he would get up for headers, he used to use the old
shoulder,
the old stump of the arm to whack the defenders.
Did he?
It was harder for the referee to kind of see, you know. Mm. But and apparently in the final, he hit the Argentinian keeper with it.
Special move.
Injured his thigh from it. He injured the keeper's thigh.
Amazing scene.
Wow. But apart from a
taking you out with his stump, that is hard.
Yeah, it's called a blade in it.
He's not the knight in Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
But he had a very brief spell in Argentina. But he played for Nacional from 1923 to 1936, playing 231 matches, scoring 145 goals. Absolutely incredible. Do you know what? He was quite well known as well for his drinking, gambling and womanising. A bit of a character. And after retirement, he became quite a successful coach with Nacional, winning 5 titles. Unfortunately, he didn't get the chance to play in any other World Cups because Uruguay didn't go to Italy in 1934. And by the time they played again, he had retired. And then, so he played until 1936, and then he became, as I said earlier, the Nacional manager, winning league titles from 39 to 43, and then once again in 1952. And he died in 1960 at the age of 55 of a heart attack. But he played 25 times for his country, scoring 20 goals.
Won the World Cup as well.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. A big thanks to Alex Reel, incidentally, one of the listeners who pointed me in his direction.
Great stuff.
So
that's what it's all about.
That's El Divino Manco, Hector Castro. So we move on to Dario Silva, a fellow Uruguayan who was born on November the 2nd, same month, 1972.
5 years after the Summer of Love.
That's right,
He was only a twinkle.
It's also worth pointing out, actually, sorry about Hector Castro, that it's anniversary of his death this week.
Oh, okay. There's your link.
There you go.
Death anniversaries this week.
Yeah. Well, Dario Silva, he hasn't died. He's still with us. Yeah.
At time of recording.
That's right, yeah. He's a striker. You played for Uruguay and a number of other clubs we'll come to in a minute. But
other clubs?
Uruguay's not really a club.
Well, all right.
Other entities.
Slip of the tongue.
Yeah.
But he had to retire following serious injury. He began his career in 91 with Defensor Sporting of Uruguay, and then he moved to Peñarol, who, as Luke was saying, were Nacional's big rivals. In the Uruguayan League. And then he moved to Europe, where he played for Cagliari, where he got the nickname Sa... Pibinka, which is the Sardinian word for nuisance, and that was because of these hard work rate and he put constant pressure on the defenders and charging around and whatnot.
Like a Paul Dickoff.
You've cheapened it.
The Wasp.
First you mentioned Julian Dix. Ringing them in.
But I've sworn that was Julian Dix.
So he played a bit for Cagliari, and then he moved to Spain, where he played with Espanyol.
And he went to Sevilla?
A little bit of Espanyol. The majority of it was with Malaga. He played over 100 times for them, and with Sevilla. He also played in the 2002 World Cup with Uruguay. But he was quite well known, Dario Silva. He was a good player, obviously, but for winding up opposition players, quite renowned for that. before the games and during the games. And a good example of this was when he was playing for Malaga when they played Real Madrid, and he came up against Fernando Hierro. And Hierro was an ex-Malaga player himself.
Some player, Hierro.
Oh, he was a great player. But during the build-up, Darius Silva was saying in a press conference that Hierro hadn't done much for Malaga, and all his achievements came with Real Madrid. And he said...
Well, a bit unfair.
Well, Silva said that he'd be waiting for him out on the pitch and he'd run rings around him because he was so slow. And he said, Silva said, 15 minutes into the game, I got past him and got a shot off that ended up shaving the post. In trying to stop me, he injured himself and had to be replaced. As he was heading off, I said, well, what did I tell you?
It's the last thing you want.
He said, they ended up winning 2-1, Malaga. But he said, yeah, the utmost respect for Hierro, and he was a great player. After that incident, of course.
Like the wrestling.
So he enjoyed a good career. I mean, he scored, he wasn't prolific. I think he scored sort of 36 and 100 league appearances for Malaga, but not one of the better teams, so not too bad. He then joined Portsmouth on a free transfer from Sevilla, Luke.
Yeah, well, he was at Sevilla after Malaga, wasn't he? I'm pretty sure he signed for Portsmouth on a free because he had been injured, and it was a bit of a gamble from Portsmouth, and he played about 15.
Not like them.
Yeah. It wasn't. I don't think it was a Redknapp signing. I think Redknapp came along afterwards. I think it might have been I don't know, I'm getting caught out here. It might have been a Rick signing. But he played about 20 games for Portsmouth, I think, all in. He scored a few goals, 4 or 5. But he was busy. I mean, I remember being. Portsmouth at that were sort of at that point where it's like, oh yeah, we're getting these sort of players. It was really exciting at that point.
He was a really good player.
His best years were behind him, but the problem was he didn't fully recover from that injury. And he was a shadow of the player he was before. But he had all the intent and all the drive and determination. And you can never fault that. But he just wasn't the player he once was, unfortunately.
Well, he was released by Portsmouth before the end of the 2006.
He was given a 2-year deal, I'm pretty sure, but 2 or 3 year deal. But it just didn't work out, and I think mutually terminated it.
Well, he moved back to Uruguay, and he was without a club. And then after the summer of 2006, he was in a car crash, and he lost his lower right leg. Which was amputated, of course, and at the time it was uncertain that he'd ever be able to walk again, let alone play football.
A bit of a big thing.
We talked about Hector Castro with the arm. This is the below the right knee all the way. It was just devastating for the man, absolutely unbelievable. So, he underwent various training programs, and he got a prosthetic limb. And then 3 years later, the unthinkable happened. On January the 13th,
Julian Dix turn up.
Stop this.
On January 13th, after being out of the game for 3 years, and of course being an amputee, he took to the pitch in a charity match for the foundation, the Children with Wings Foundation in Uruguay, which is to raise money for needy youngsters in his country. And a Uruguay 11 took on an Argentinian 11, with the big man donning the number 9 shirt.
Wow.
Got the score sheet, didn't he?
And he stepped up to score a penalty.
Yeah, nice.
Can you believe that?
That's amazing.
With a prosthetic limb.
That's brilliant.
It's absolutely incredible. And when he scored that, it's a wonderful, wonderful video clip. Please check it out because it's superb. And when he puts it in, he sends the keeper the wrong way, and everyone on the pitch just comes up and hugs him.
Yeah.
Absolutely wonderful.
One does he put in with? I don't want it to be grotesque.
He's left.
Okay.
But you've got to. There was also talk of him actually playing regularly again.
I'm not sure. There has been reports.
Because he's not that old, mate. He's like 36 or something like that.
He's 37 now.
37,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I think there was reports a couple of years ago that he joined a local semi-pro team. Again, how true this is, I'm not too sure, but there are reports that he scored sort of 40 goals in 31 games.
Romario's involved.
Yeah, by the sound of things. But he does get involved, I think, in sort of sponsored runs and marathons and stuff. But the one thing that he is dedicating a lot of his time to, that, and he said that he would like to participate in the 2012 Olympic Games as a rower.
Oh, nice.
And he said, I love to row, and I am challenging myself to achieve my goal at London 2012. This is a promise and dream that I hope to accomplish.
That would be amazing.
It would be great. That would be great.
I'll go down and see him.
Yeah.
Welcome him with open arms.
That would be amazing. I'd love to see that.
So two Uruguayans who played in vastly different eras, who were both... amputees,
disadvantaged,
massively, and achieved so much. And but with Silva, I think it's okay. You might say, Castro won the World Cup when he was had his arm, but I mean, this is half a leg, he's come back to let alone walk to play a match. And
they're both worthy entries. I'll sleep fine tonight knowing they're both.
And then they come.
Welcome.
The team and that's all fine. ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of the Football Ramble. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to get in touch, the email address is podcast@thefootballramble.com. And we've got massive news. I'm going to let Luke say it.
Yeah, Marcus will be leaving the Football Ramble.
From immediate effect.
Oh, sorry, yeah. No, sorry, I must have misread the moment. No, we've got a new website coming. It's being launched. It'll be launched and ready by the time you hear this. Thefootballramble.com, as always. It's got an array of blogs from our excellent writing team.
And myself.
And James, yeah.
It really is like top class.
We've got Andy Top Brass Brassel.
Actual journalist Andy Brassel.
Yeah. BBC World phone in.
James Appel, 442.com's Joel Richards, lots of different people.
Chris Knee
of 2FootTackle.com, who's an expert on the MLS.
Rupert Fryer. Rupert from South
our very own Rupert Fryer.
We could be here all night listening to these, couldn't we, James? it's also got a place where you can listen to the show, and there'll be a little Dean Windass Hall of Fame entrant for each show, and so you haven't got to keep asking us. I know we've been taking a while to get that together, but we've done that now. There'll be a discussion forum where you can go on and talk about the show and talk about football.
We're going to be on there too.
Yeah. Ramble TV.
I'm looking forward to the forum.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great.
Ramble TV.
There's going to be loads of things. So
get on there.
Make sure you tell your friends and get yourself on thefootballramble.com. It's unmissable. Back to you, Marcus.
I can't top that, and I won't.
No. For me, it's Twitter, Facebook, Google, and then us.
Yeah.
The big four for me. Yeah. The big four at the top.
Yeah. Marvellous.
Painstakingly afterwards.
We're going to win the internet.
Painstakingly put together by none other than Matt Isherwood.
I've never heard of him.
Our new webmaster. No one's heard of him, but he's not bad.
Yeah. He's a good lad. I think that's it, isn't it? Say goodbye, Lukey.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Pete.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, James or Jim.
Goodbye.
We're all off to abuse a referee. Ta-ta.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.